Hey, everybody, we're back. This is part two with Peter Berman. We're going to continue the fun. Thanks for being here.
Well, this is my mom, Nellie.
Yay, yay.
Say, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to my daughter, what?
Podcast.
Podcast.
Podcast. I know, podcast. That's a weird name.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Find the Funny, a new episode with my guest, Peter Berman, a hilarious comedian and friend of mine. He also actually helped me on my documentary, which is called Don't Wait, The Michael Schmidt Story. And we renamed it to The Funny Thing About Death. Everybody, say hi to Peter.
It's hey, Peter Berman. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited you're here.
I'm excited to be here.
So that you guys know, the long story short, the documentary is about a man whose dying wish was to perform stand-up comedy. And he asked me to help him. And I assembled an amazing group of comedians to help me write jokes for Michael.
Is he going to say this, what the disease is?
This is Karen Rontowski. There's Johnny Sanchez.
Leo did that joke about, I have PLS and... you know, it's, I can't even get the cool disease.
Everybody knows about ALS, you know.
That's Leo Flowers saying that. Yeah. This is Alonzo Bowden.
Less known disease.
Right, right.
You didn't even get the good disease. Right,
right. Here's Becky Pettigo.
The one that nobody knows about.
Actually, Brian, do you want to deliver a couple of jokes?
This is my buddy, Brian Kiley.
I had a busy day. I returned my Fitbit.
Sometimes strangers will say to me, you've got it easy. And I say, you mean the wheelchair? Or the diaper. Here.
See, that one was good.
So here's Michael killing the joke during his set.
Can't wait. It's still going to be funny, which is great. Yeah.
Sometimes strangers say dumb things to me, like, you've got it so easy. And I say, you mean the wheelchair or the diaper? If I'm going to say that, you better laugh.
Okay, Spizza, let's go to...
I have another question for you.
Yes.
What's that like, though? You're personally rooting for him.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there holding the mic, and you have...
Yes.
You have no say in the matter. I mean, I'm assuming probably one of the most nerve-wracking times you've ever been on stage, right?
Yeah. Oh, by far.
Yeah. I mean...
Powerless to a point.
Right, because we work on... maintaining some level of control.
Right.
And you have none. You're just watching your friend and you want it to go well.
Uh-huh.
And you want it to go well for him.
Right. And I know we're filming this and I know he's doing his thing and everybody's watching, but I would pull the microphone down and be like, slow down.
Oh, you would? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, because I was like, slow down. And I'm trying to do it like where they don't see my lips moving because, you know, when we get nervous, you automatically start rifling through your material. And I was like, if you just give that tag a beat, it's going to destroy. But if you talk right through the laughter, they're going to stop laughing because they need to hear what you're saying.
That's another layer of this whole situation, right?
Right.
That's what I was asking. Another layer is all the time you guys are spending and effort you're putting into just being friends. And it's being friends around this. And
right.
It's like a moment in like a movie, right? It's a moment that... you know, you think one way, he thinks another way, and he trusts you.
And the most amazing part is at the end, even the day before he passed, I was in bed with him, just, you know, talking with him about, because I knew I had very limited time left, but just being there and is there anything you want to talk? It's like, how do you say goodbye to a person the day before their death? Like,
I know, it just seems like so much tension that
which is why
there's just this tension all the time. There's this tension on how he's gonna do. There's this tension on how he's gonna live his life. There's a tension on how much time you have with one another.
At the same time, we used comedy even at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Even when right before he was dying, I saw him in so much pain. We were laughing.
Great.
We were like crying with the pain part, but we were crying with the laughing part.
Yeah, you think real life's really happening until real life is really happening. Yeah. Then you're like, whoa, this is real life.
Whoa,
yeah.
this is really death.
When stuff feels like it's a fucking scene in a movie, you're like, okay, this is...
Yeah. And it was very interesting because he had family members, friends. So people came into the venue, like his family was crying when they came in.
Yeah.
Knowing that, I think, happy and also very nervous because they didn't know me. They didn't know if I was going to humiliate their dad or, or brother or people flew in from other parts of the country knowing that he was doing this. And it was a tremendous amount of pressure to help him kill and also just be like, be there for him as a friend. And also before the set, he was suffering physically. Like he was having twitches and pain in his legs. And he's like, I'm not going to take morphine today because I know it'll make me really slow and out of it.
Yeah, I was up.
So he was dealing with the pain while he was on stage and telling me, okay, if my leg goes in the spasm, this is how you hold it down. I'm like, whoa, I'm not a nurse, dude. Yeah. I'm writing dick jokes here. I, you know, like, so I had 10 different levels of anxiety dealing with his parents. A news crew came, making sure that someone was there to have a teleprompter for him. What if he wasn't getting laughs? You just did everything, but then putting on a smile going, but then the joy, sometimes what I'm laughing at is not necessarily the joke because I know the joke. It's that he's enjoying it and they're laughing at him and I'm just so happy. Like I was just so full of, I'm like, he's doing it.
I love documentaries and I think a lot of people do. And if you're, in a weird way, if you're fascinated about a documentary, then maybe we should go into a whole new genre, the documentary of the making of the documentary.
Where
does the enthusiasm and inquisitiveness end, really? Yeah. Like all the stuff you're talking about.
The layers.
It's like almost as interesting as... So yeah, we'll go into a new thing. We'll make documentaries of everyone making documentaries.
As long as I don't have to shoot it. I'll talk, but I don't want to shoot. We don't want to edit. This is the other joke that he had a problem with that was absolutely by far my favorite joke of the show. And he's like, I don't think I can say that because it's not true. And I go, do you think comedians say the truth when we're on stage? The joke that we started writing is probably based in truth of what we feel about that subject, but we exaggerate all the time. So Bill Dwyer and I wrote this joke and I had to convince Michael that it was funny and appropriate. He's like, but it's not true.
Ooh, I can't wait
to see. So here's this joke. It's my favorite joke of the whole set.
Some people say dumb things when they see me in my wheelchair. I'd like to get one of those babies. And I say, I can walk. This is just for my enormous cock.
But look at his face. That's why he said, who knew? Because he... And it was just fascinating to see him because when we write jokes, it's the same thing. We don't know how big of a pop it's going to get. We don't know if it's going to kill or not. We know it might be funny, but we're like, it's just a nugget of a thing. We haven't run it in front of a live audience.
Well, it also, you know, there's a random group of people at a show.
Yeah.
I mean, even this one, it's a random group of people. You have no idea what their sensibilities are.
Right.
I mean, I've told people and I've talked about it with other comedians, you know, you might, you know, there might be a crowd and they're like slapping their knees or we'll call them a 10, right? They're like, But you might just have a group of people that is, they're quieter.
Yeah.
But it's also a 10.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the knee slapping is not the only 10. Like, so there's all these variables.
Yeah.
And if you have been doing comedy for what, like at least, I don't know, probably 10 years at least, you know, it has to probably be at least 10 years that you're like, okay, I've seen the whole, a gamut.
Right.
And then everything after that is more and more information about that. He's telling these jokes. He has no frame of reference other than he's telling jokes.
Right.
I mean, he has no frame of reference, right?
He's so trusting that's like a whole nother.
Right. And
yeah.
So even when it's all happening, even laughing, these things that you're saying he didn't expect it or the, it's all new.
Yeah.
It's all new.
Yep.
And he has no frame of reference to know. And some of these huge jokes, how would he know what a big, huge room full of people laughing feels like or sounds like.
Oh my gosh. It was so magical to watch him, knowing that this is his dream, because he's a funny guy. He used to make people laugh in his life, but that transition from being the funny guy at a party to actually getting on stage.
A room full of people, right?
Really?
I mean,
different.
It's like it must have just felt like you, well, that's it. Other thing, besides you being nervous, you're right there next to him. I mean, I'm assuming you have a different understanding of what that all meant to him,
right?
Despite the crowd laughing.
Right.
You know, all these inside, he didn't know
right.
this one or that
right.
one, which that's a whole nother thing. I mean, a lot of times people come see us.
Right.
And they might not like someone's joke, or they might like someone's joke. But as a comedian, we know the truth about that joke.
Right.
We know the truth about that joke. And that I always feel like that's what's really cool to whether the crowd likes it or not, is to know like, oh, that's like a big thing that that person we know just said.
Yeah.
And it's also a big thing that it got a laugh, or it doesn't matter that it didn't get a really laugh, or
right.
whatever the case may be.
Right.
I think.
Oh yeah. It's just such a fantastic, fascinating process, what we do.
Was he in a lot of pain? He looks to me like, besides he's enjoying himself, he looks like he's having...
I think what he was going through was nerves. Like, he was really nervous. He was thinking he was going to forget. He was in pain. But you know how we've performed before, when we've gone through something traumatic in our life, or something happened to a loved one or whatever, and we get on stage, we're dealing
yeah.
with pain.
Yeah.
And sometimes physical pain. I've gone up on stage really sick. Yeah. Sometimes you don't know which is worse, the physical pain or the emotional pain. But maybe you're going through heartbreak, or someone that you love passed, and you're like, well, I'm supposed to be funny right now. I got to portray this other side of me. But then somehow meld the three things, your regular act, reality, what you're going through, actually, and what they're going through, like where they're at. So
yeah.
That's four things, I
what
guess.
What I've found when I'm aware to put it into play is and we're all different. I mean, we're all different people. We're all different comedians.
Right.
We have all different ways that we approach it. For me, when I'm aware of this, what I appreciated was, like you could go do your exact same act and you could be angry. And you
mm-hmm.
could do all your jokes
mm-hmm.
with an angry subtext, and they all work. And you get to get out some anger. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh,
or
uh-huh.
you could do it whichever way, sad or
yeah.
slower or
mm-hmm.
more energetic. You could do
right.
all the same stuff in it, and it works differently for whatever reason. And I think if you're doing that, then that's what people vibe on. And I always did appreciate the little bit of escape that we could have up there by doing that. Even
uh-huh.
even the exact same act with just being right where you are. So
yeah.
I always enjoyed that. I found that part more kind of therapeutic than...
Right.
But it also changes. I don't know.
Because you've been doing it a really long time.
Well, there's so many variables that people don't understand about stand-up. They
yes.
really don't.
Right.
They really don't understand. I'm never that, like, I don't you know, put it on a pedestal, or I'm going to use the word grandiose for twice in the same day. I don't even ever use
times,
it,
but
there's so many, you know, I mean, there's one whole chunk of what you're trying to do in your mind as a human.
Right.
You know, which is everybody's trying to do that every day. Right. And that's a lot for a lot of people, just that. And then what you're trying to do with your act, what your intention is with your act, that's like a whole nother layer. And then what you're trying to do to this group of people that I used to think we had a lot of control over them, but I don't think we do. I don't think we have as much control over
no.
them as we think we do.
Yeah.
I think it's more, I used to think we had a lot of control over them, and we do, but I think that it's more when the student is ready, the teacher appears. I think, you know,
Yeah,
I think we're just supposed to put it out there.
Yeah.
But we don't think that a lot of times, because you were very goal oriented.
You know what? I don't think you know this. Sorry to interrupt you. I don't think that you know this, but during the taping, after we did the round table, I think that you noticed in me that I was so stressed out, and you took a minute. The things that you said to me after the round table were so fantastic and really helped me get out of my head because I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah, I don't remember the specific, but I remember that. I remember noticing that you were just trying, all the stuff you mentioned earlier that you wanted.
I was overwhelmed.
I knew it would be great. Whatever you did would be great.
Yeah, and you were just like, this is already great. This is already good. Yeah. It's out of your control. He's going to do his dream.
Yeah.
But you just assuring me that me being there and doing what I was doing was enough.
But that was enough. I'm going to be super corny, but isn't that life?
Yeah.
What we're all doing is enough.
Yeah. Yes.
It is. And it doesn't matter. Right where you are is right where you are.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I was stuck
But even as stand-ups we go on, like that's not enough. And like, well, what are you going to do about it? Like in that moment, what are you going to do about it? When you go on stage or he went on stage or whatever night we go on stage, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to write a brand new act?
Right.
Or are you just going to go try to do what you do to the best of your ability? But then sometimes we can't do that because it's all the voices or the whatever or the reaction or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, it's I hate when all those stupid corny sayings are true, but they are. We're all doing the best we can.
Right.
And we're all right where we are.
Right. It was hard for me with my personality type. I tend to be more like OCD, very detail oriented. I write a set before I go on stage. I went to some shitty hookah lounge last night to do comedy.
Don't you have your stuff in different inks, colors?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Like even this is different colors. See? I have different colors. I have things underlined because I'm kind of dyslexic.
Yeah,
I have processing
yin and
delay.
Yang, it's good and bad.
Yeah. And, and I prep as much as I can for pretty much everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And it's good and bad because it takes a long time. I'm very specific. I always looked at comedians that could just like be eating a hamburger right before their set, not even thinking about their comedy, and just go on stage.
Well, that's what you think though. No, I'm just saying that's the other thing.
But I've seen some guys or women just talking about their weekend and whatever.
That's
and then they go on stage.
That's kind of my
like,
approach.
Yes.
But you don't know the internal.
I don't know the internal. No. What I'm saying is like, if you saw me before a show, I'm like, writing stuff down.
We did a TV taping together.
Yeah, which one was that?
It was at the improv during the day.
Oh, we did do a TV taping together.
I was amazed at all the cards you had with all the writing on
it.
Oh my
gosh.
Yeah, well, I mean, good for you though. That's what you do. That's not my process and it's yours and that's totally fine.
And that's how I prep. Part of the reason I do that is my memory is really poor. So as soon as I get up there, if I have a new joke or I have a new thing that I haven't practiced a ton and done it on stage a ton, I'm going to forget it. So I write these little things. I have this whole system. Like I put a set list in my pocket before every set. It doesn't matter if I'm at a bowling alley. I look at it right before I get on stage. It's just my process. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a ritual or routine. If I didn't look at it, would I know the joke? Sure, of course. But it's almost like if I don't have it, this throws off the whole set.
That stuff puts more pressure on me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not going to be able to remember this list.
But you saying those things to me took me out of that, of like thinking that I could control Michael's set or how it turned out. I can't.
Yeah.
All I can do is prep him as well as I can. The comedians, they all came in. They gave up their time and energy. We did these kick-ass jokes. Now, whatever's going to happen is going
to
happen.
But you also, that's the deal with, I was listening to another podcast. It's actually Dana Carvey and Spade's podcast about SNL.
Yeah.
And they had Ray Romano on there.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing, but Ray basically said that, I actually didn't know this, but he said that, you know, he had done like the Young Comedian special and he had some late night stuff. And at that point in time, which I think might've even been pre-internet, there was no development deal was the only thing. That was it. There weren't all these avenues, right? And he got news radio and he got fired on the second day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Got fired on the second day at 6 a.m. in the morning, he said his agent called. And they went a different direction and they replaced him with Joe Rogan.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And as a comedian and all the stuff we talked about, I can only imagine that Ray probably thought that was it, right? He probably thought that was it. Like, that's it, and he's no good, and he's not cut off for this business, and I'm assuming, you know what I mean? And all these horrible things, but look what was in store for him too, right? So And I know that's a big thing to trust all the time, not as comedians in life. Right. I would hope that people watching this, that stuff that they get out of your podcast is you really don't know, right? You're just supposed to show up and you just show up. But I, as a comedian, I imagined how horrible he felt about that and all the things he led himself to believe, and none of them turned out to be true.
Yeah.
Look what happened.
Yeah.
So you don't even know. It's always about, we just focus on the good stuff, but also you don't even know what the bad stuff has in store for you. You really don't.
Oh yeah.
You don't know all the,
right,
not lessons. You just don't even know all the,
right,
opportunity seems to only be put in the category of something good.
Yeah.
But opportunity exists all the time just by
showing up. And sometimes saying no to something else will bring you this. Like, that's how I got to meet Michael and the documentary and all that stuff, is because I left a writing job. So when he asked me to help him.
I remember that too, actually.
I never would have been able to if I didn't leave the writing job, which I was working 10, 12 hours a day.
I remember that was actually, now that you're saying that, I remember you saying that was the reason why you were staying, and the reason why you would leave is to present opportunities.
Yeah. And it came. But I had to trust that, and it was really scary to leave security for not security.
Well, find the funny, right? But how about just trust? I mean, like, what I think is interesting, I love America. I don't love it too much, but I love it. I love our country, but I was just going to talk about a philosophy that we have here. And the philosophy we have here is we're taught to achieve, right?
Yes.
We're all taught to achieve. And some people achieve and some don't. Some comedians achieve and some don't. But what we are not taught is how to deal with shit. Mm-hmm. And everybody has shit to deal with.
Yeah. Everybody has a different coping mechanism.
So just funny, like, maybe we should, you know, help each other deal with shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's basically the show. He just said it. Everybody learn to deal with shit. That's what Finding the Funny is all about.
Yeah, and that is what it is.
It's two different perspectives. So you have the same situation, whether it be someone fell off a bike and they hurt themselves. Well, you could be really sad. You could focus on the fact that your bike isn't working anymore. You can focus on the fact that you're going to get in trouble. What hurts on your knee now or you can go, holy cow, did someone get that on tape? Or, wow, I have a great story now. Or, hey, maybe I'll get a new bike because this one's all bent up. Or now I'll get empathy. Or maybe I get ice cream for dinner. There's so many different ways to think of a situation. And that's what I love about what we do, is we're finding the funny in it. You know?
And presenting, just putting that out there. But that's not even enough for us, though, as comedians. We're not. This world's about achieving. It's not enough to just go, oh, yeah, go out there, Lisa, and go out there, Peter, and just speak your truth. And then that'll be that. No, I mean, there's, you know, amongst other comedians, just the business itself, it is also about achieving. So,
yeah.
I mean, my wife practices Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And for a while, that's why it's Buddhism instead of Buddhism. But she was telling me this sort of a story that I think of. I don't know what you want to call it, a story or whatever. But she's like, you know, it's to the point you just said. Well, it could be snowing outside, right? And one person could look at the snow and be like, it's going to make my life miserable. I have to leave earlier for work, and you know, it's going to take longer to get there, and it's a big pain in the ass, the snow. And then another person could look at the snow and be like, oh, look at how peaceful it is. It's coating everything, and everything's white, and it's still, right?
Right.
But it's still just snow.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's all perspective. It's all what you look for in it.
So
what you concentrate on.
Right. And that's what I was saying. We like to think we have control over the crowd, but you don't know. You listed a whole bunch of things. So when you do a joke, how do you know which thing that they relate to? Is it this or that or this or that? It's not the one thing that we just said. It's a world of things that make people find something funny. And we were talking about it at the beginning, and then what that funny does to them.
Are there any bits right now that you're working on that you're like excited about, new stuff that you're just like, oh, I can't wait till this gets worked out?
Well, I'm working on, this is what's funny about why it's difficult, but I had a friend, my very dear friend, kill himself. He's my like childhood friend, right? And you can't really talk about suicide. You can't really even talk about death on stage. That's the genesis for this thought I was just going to tell you about. And it also is perspective, but the gist of the joke is perspective, right? Like, so I've tried it a few times on stage and I'm like, so I said, if you're in a place in your life where you're thinking that you'd like to die, I mean, that's like a really intense place to be in, right? Mm-hmm. And also it's difficult to talk about because people don't understand the pressure that comes with those kind of thoughts, right? So people don't really want to hear you talk about wanting to die, right? But if you phrase it differently, you're not afraid of dying, then that sounds kind of sexy and mm-hmm. cool, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I go, so if you're thinking you want to die, but you're afraid of what people might think about the fact that you think that, and I go, and those go hand in hand. Wow. I go, just phrase it differently. You could be like, I'm not afraid to die. And I like toast and taking baths. And I like meditating in my car, in the garage with the engine running. And
that's awesome.
But it's all just words, right? It's all just perspective, right? So you're a badass if you're not afraid to die.
Right, exactly.
And there's something wrong with you.
Right.
If you want to kill yourself. So which is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It again, perspective. That's a really deep, I can't wait to see that work out.
I've been
on
talking
stage.
About death a little bit here and there. And it's like almost like, have you ever said the word diarrhea on stage? Man, that's a showstopper. So no. Talking about death. Have you mentioned death at all?
I've never done it on stage. I just wrote down the concept about my parents, because my parents are getting to that age. Mm-hmm. And I talk to them both because I want them to be of sound mind and body to tell me what they want. Do you want a funeral? Do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? Like what, how do you see mm-hmm. it? How do you mm-hmm. want me to honor mm-hmm. you in the end? And both of them were like, we want to be cremated, which blew my mind because they are Catholic mm-hmm. and you know, my mom was all about, we need to talk to the pastor to make sure that cremation doesn't mean I'm going to go to hell. Mm. And once we talked to the pastor and he said, no, it doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that you, because your body, your spirit leaves your body, you know? And so the body basically is going to decompose anyway in a casket, if that's mm-hmm. what you choose. So my whole thing was, how do I make that relatable and funny? And, but also talk about the scary part. And so my first thing was like that I talked to both my parents about it and they both want to be cremated. I'm like, okay, well, all right. So then we'll have the urn and the whole thing. And then it was then just finding the different things about that. Like, where do you spread their ashes and who goes first? And
I found it very challenging to talk about death. It just people out.
Yeah. Like the things that Michael went through, it was fascinating to me because I had never thought before that, I had never thought about telling my son what my plan was. Because I could walk out and get hit by a bus and my kid would never know. Did I want to get cremated? Who do I want at the funeral? Like, do I even want a big thing or like how he can best honor me? So now I think I have it worked out. So now I'm going to tell him that. Because he's being a little shit right now. So he's being really distant. So
maybe have two different lists.
That's what I mean. That's fantastic.
Maybe have the first one. If you're feeling like this, read this list.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're close.
What was that? Princess Bride? Was that the movie? Outthink what, maybe he'll be looking at the two envelopes and he'll be like, if I'm thinking like this, then she wanted me to open this one. So maybe I should open the other one.
Right, right. Take the blue pill.
And then just have both lists be the same. Don't
try. That's perfect. Yeah. That's exactly
tell them
it.
Only read one of these. You can only read one, but they're the same list.
But even at the end, it's probably he's going to undo it and it'll be a dick joke. That's so mean.
Well, like when you keep opening a present and it's a bigger box and a smaller box.
Yeah. Here's your inheritance. Yeah. It's this dick joke. Yeah, it's my favorite dick joke.
Great.
I would be so me. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Find the Funny. This is where you can find Peter. Where can they find your work?
Oh.
Do you have a website?
Nah, I'm on like Instagram and Facebook, but you know, okay. I'm mostly Peter working in my Berman. Mind. Yeah.
What's your at?
I think it's.
At Peter Berman.
Are you joking?
No, I'm Lisa Alvarado, comedian. So some people have like different.
Wait a minute. Hold.
This is how old
hold.
He is. He's taking his phone out as we speak to find out.
Hold, please.
He doesn't even know his own handle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's on Instagram. It's Peter_Berman.
Okay, see?
And then I think Facebook, it's maybe just Peter Berman.
Okay. All right, we'll put links in the description. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you do that.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Description, show notes, whatever the hell it is. Something down there. You'll be able to click and see more of Peter's work. And thank you so much for being a part of this.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope everybody, really, I hope they listen to this podcast and I hope they end up getting an opportunity to watch the documentary. And I hope that from your podcast, they're able to appreciate all the layers of the documentary too.
Really, and comedy and life and how we should be treating one another.
And everybody just be good to yourselves and be good to one another.
Exactly.
That's
yeah. That's it. Bye guys. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
I hope everybody listen to my daughter and see it and laughing with her because she is very funny.